Chapter 15. They Only Come for the Wild Maiden. The blinding afternoon sunlight gave way to honey gold, and at last to amber and rust. A faint half moon showed just above a line of pale yellow sky. The heat of the day went with the light, and the men in the barley field shivered in their cooling sweat. Constantine put his scythe over his shoulder. Bloody blisters had blossomed beneath the hardened skin of his palms. He balanced the scythe with his fingertips and avoided Pyotr Vladimirovich. Longing closed his throat and wrath stole his voice. It was a demon. It was your imagination. You did not cast her out. You crawled toward her. God, he wanted to go back to Moscow or Kiev or further yet. To eat bread hot and plentiful instead of starving half the year. To leave the plowing to farmers, to speak before thousands, and never lie awake, wondering. No, God had given him a task. He could not lay it aside half finished. Oh, if I could but finish. His jaw set. He would. He must. And before he died, he would live again in a world where girls did not defy him and demons did not walk in Christian daylight. Constantine passed the mown barley and skirted the horse pasture. The edge of the wood threw hungry shadows. He turned his face away toward Pyotr's herds grazing in the long twilight. A flash of brightness showed among the grays and chestnuts. Constantine narrowed his eyes. One horse, Pyotr's war stallion, stood still, his head up. A slender figure stood at the beast's shoulder, silhouetted against the sunset. Constantine knew her at once. The stallion curved its wicked head around to nibble at her braid, and she laughed like a child. Constantine had never seen Vasya so. In the house, she was grave and wary, careless and charming by turn, all eyes and bones and soundless feet. But alone under the sky, she was beautiful as a yearling filly or a new-flown hawk. Constantine forced his face to coldness. Her people offered him beeswax and honey, begged him for counsel and prayers. They kissed his hand, their faces lit when they saw him. But that girl avoided his glance and his footstep. Yet a horse, a dumb beast, could charm that light from her. The light should have been for him, for God, for him as God's messenger. She was, as Anna Ivanovna named her, hard-hearted, undutiful, unmaidenly. She conversed with demons and dared to boast that she'd saved his life. But his fingers itched for wood and wax and brushes, to capture the love and loneliness, the pride and half-blossomed womanhood written in the lines of the girl's body. She saved your life, Konstantin Nikonovich. Savagely, he quelled both thought and impulse. Painting was for the glory of God, not to glorify the frailty of transient flesh. She summoned the devil. It was the finger of God that saved my life. But when he tore himself away, the scene was burned on the backs of his eyelids. It was violet eventide when Vasya came into the kitchen, still flushed with the day's sun. She seized her bowl and spoon, claimed a portion for herself, and took it to the window. The twilight greened her eyes. She tore into her food, pausing from time to time to glance out into the long summer dusk. With stiff, deliberate steps, Constantine placed himself beside her. Her hair smelled of earth and sun and lake water. She did not look away from the window. The village was starry with well-tended fires. A faint half-moon soared in a cloud-fretted sky. The silence between them stretched out amid the bustle of the crowded kitchen. It was the priest that broke it.
I am a man of God, Constantine said low.
but I would have been sorry to die.
Vasya gave him a swift, startled glance. A ghost of a smile showed in the corner of her mouth.
I don't believe it, Batyushka, she said. Did I not rob you of your quick ascent to heaven?
I thank you for my life, Konstantin went on stiffly, but God is not mocked.
His hand was suddenly warm on hers. The smile left her face.
Remember, he said.
He slipped an object between her fingers. His hand, roughened with a scythe, slid over her knuckles. He did not speak. Suddenly, Vasya understood why the women all begged him for prayers. Understood, too, that his warm hand, the strong bones of his face, were a weapon, to use where the weapons of speech had failed. He would get her obedience thus, with his rough hand, his beautiful eyes.
Am I as great a fool as Anna Ivanovna?
Vasya threw her head back and pulled away. He let her go. She did not see his hand tremble. His shadow wavered on the wall when he walked away. Anna was stitching linens on her stool by the hearth. The cloth slipped to her knees and, when she stood, fell unheeded to the floor.
What did he give you? She hissed. What was it?
Every spot and line stood out on her face. Vasya had no idea, but she lifted the thing for her stepmother to see. It was his wooden cross with the two reaching arms carved of silky pine wood. Vasya gazed at it in some wonder.
What is this, priest? A warning? An apology? A challenge?
A cross, she said, but Anna had seized it.
It's mine, she said. He meant it for me. Get out.
There were several things Vasya might have said, but she settled on the safest.
I am sure he did.
But she did not go. She took her bowl to the hearth to charm more stew out of Dunya and steal a heel of bread from her unwary sister. In a few minutes, Vasya was dabbing her bowl with the crust and laughing at Irina's bewildered face. Anna did not speak again, but neither did she take up her sewing. Vasya, for all her laughter, could feel her stepmother's burning stare. Anna did not sleep that night, but paced from her bed to the church. When a deep, clear dawn replaced the blue summer midnight, she went to her husband and shook him awake. Never once in 9 years had Anna come to Pyotr of her own will. Pyotr seized his wife in a very businesslike choke before he realized who it was. Anna's hair straggled, gray-brown about her face, and her kerchief hung askew. Her eyes were like two stones. My love, she said, gasping and massaging her throat.
What is wrong? Pyotr demanded.
He slipped from his warm bed and hurried into his clothes.
Is it Irina?
Anna smoothed her hair, straightened her kerchief. No, no. Pyotr dragged the shirt over his head and did up his sash.
Then what?
He said in no very pleasant tones. She had startled him, badly. Anna trembled, her eyelids downswept. Have you noticed that your daughter Vasilisa is much grown since last summer? Pyotr's movements faltered. The infant day threw lines of pale gold across his floor. Anna had never taken an interest in Vasya.
Has she?
He said, bewildered now.
And that she's grown quite passably attractive?
Pyotr blinked and frowned.
She is a child. A woman! Snapped Anna.
Pyotr was taken aback. She had never contradicted him before.
A hoyden, all arms and legs and eyes. But she will have a good dowry. Better to see her married now, husband. If she loses what looks she has, she might not marry at all.
She will not lose her looks in the next year, said Pyotr curtly. And certainly not in the next hour. Why rouse me, wife?
He left the room. The nutty tang of baking bread gladdened the house.
and he was hungry.
Your daughter Olga was married at 14. Anna followed him breathlessly. Olga had prospered since her marriage. She was become a great lady, a fat matron with two children. Her husband was high in the Grand Prince's favor. Pyotr seized a new loaf and broke it open.
I will consider the matter, he said, to silence her.
He took a great ball of the steaming insides and filled his mouth. His teeth ached sometimes. The softness was not unwelcome.
You are an old man, Pyotr thought.
He shut his eyes and tried to drown his wife's voice with the sound of chewing. The men went to the barley fields at daybreak. All morning, they scythed the rippling grass with great howling strokes, and then they spread the stalks to dry. The rakes went to and fro with a monotonous hiss. The sun was a live thing, throwing its hot arms over their necks. Their feeble shadows hid at their feet. Their faces glowed with sweat and sunburn. Pyotr and his sons worked alongside the peasants. Everyone worked at harvest time. Pyotr was jealous of every kernel. The barley had not grown so tall as it ought, and the heads were thin and poor. Alyosha straightened his aching back and shielded his eyes with a dirty hand. His face lit. A rider was coming down from the village, galloping on a brown horse.
Finally, he said.
He put two fingers in his mouth. A long whistle split the midday stillness. All across the field, men put aside their rakes, rubbed grass ends from their faces, and made for the river. The deep green banks and the chuckling water gave a little relief from the heat. Pyotr leaned on his rake and pushed the wet, grizzled hair from his brow, but he did not leave the barley field. The rider was coming nearer, galloping on a neat-footed mare. Pyotr squinted. He could make out his second daughter's black braid streaming behind her, but she was not riding her own quiet pony. Misha's white feet flashed in the dust. Vasya saw her father and swung an arm in salute. Pyotr waited, scowling, to reprove his daughter when she came nearer.
She will break her neck one day, that mad thing.
But how well she sat the horse. The mare vaulted a ditch and came on at a gallop, her rider motionless except for the flying hair. The two came to a halt at the edge of the wood. Vasya had a reed basket balanced before her. In the bright sunlight, Pyotr could not make out her features, but it struck him how tall she had grown.
Are you not hungry, father? She called.
The mare stood still, poised. And bridleless, she wore nothing at all, not so much as a robe halter. Vasya rode with both hands on her basket.
I am coming, Vasya, he said,
feeling unaccountably grim. He set his rake on his shoulder. The sun glanced off a golden head. Konstantin Nikonovich had not quit the barley field, but stood watching the slender rider until the trees hid her.
My daughter rides like a stepboy. What must he think of her, our virtuous priest?
The men were flinging the cold water over their heads and drinking it in great handfuls. When Pyotr came to the creek, Vasya was off her horse and among them, passing a skin bag full of kvass. Dunya had made an enormous pasty in the oven, lumpy with grain and cheese and summer vegetables. The men gathered round and sawed off wedges. Grease mixed with the sweat on their faces. It struck Pyotr how strange Vasya looked among the big, coarse men, with her long bones and her slenderness, her great eyes set so wide apart.
I want a daughter like my mother was, Marina had said.
Well, there she was, a falcon among cows. The men did not speak to her. They ate their pie quickly, heads down, and went back to the scorching fields. Alyosha tugged his sister's braid and grinned at her in passing. But Pyotr saw the men throwing her backward glances as they went.
Witch, one of them murmured, though Pyotr did not hear. She has charmed the horse, the priest says.
The pasty was gone, and the men with it. But Vasya lingered. She set the skin of kvass aside and went to dip her hands in the stream. She walked like a child.
Well, of course she does. She is a girl still, my little frog.
And yet she had a wild thing's heedless grace. Vasya left the stream and came toward him, gathering up her basket on the way. Pyotr had a shock when he looked her in the face, which is perhaps why he frowned so blackly. Her smile faded. Here, father, she said, and handed him the skin of kvass.
Oh, savior, he thought. Perhaps Anna Ivanovna did not speak so wrong. If she is not a woman, she will be soon.
Father Constantine's gaze, Pyotr saw, lingered again on his daughter.
Vasya, Pyotr said, rougher than he meant. What is the meaning of this, taking the mare and riding her so, without saddle or bridle? You'll break an arm or your foolish neck.
Vasya flushed.
Dunya bid me take the basket and make haste.
Mish was the nearest horse, and it was only a little way, too short to trouble with a saddle.
Or a halter, dochka,
said Pyotr with some asperity. Vasya's blush deepened.
I did not come to harm, father.
Pyotr looked her over in silence. If she'd been a boy, he'd have been applauding that display of horsemanship. But she was a girl, a hoydenish girl, on the cusp of womanhood. Pyotr remembered again the young priest's stare.
We'll talk of this later, said Pyotr. Go home to Dunya and do not ride so fast.
Yes, father, said Vasya meekly. But there was pride in the way she vaulted to the horse's back, and pride also in the control with which she turned the mare and sent her cantering, neck arched, back in the direction of the house. The day wound on to dusk and passed, so that the only light was the pale glow of summer that lit the nights like morning.
Dunya, said Pyotr, how long has Vasya been a woman?
They sat alone in the summer kitchen. All around them the household slept. But for Pyotr, the daylit nights banished sleep, and the question of his daughter bit at him. Dunya's limbs ached, and she was not eager to lie down on her hard pallet. She twirled her distaff, but slowly. It struck Pyotr how thin she was. Dunya gave Pyotr a hard glance.
Half a year. It came on her near Easter. She is a handsome girl, said Pyotr, though a savage. She needs a husband. It would steady her.
But as he spoke, an image came to him of his wild girl, wedded and bedded, sweating over an oven. The image filled him with a strange regret, and he shook it away. Dunya put aside her distaff and said slowly,
She has not thought of love yet, Pyotr Vladimirovich. And so? She will do as she is told.
Dunya laughed.
Will she? Have you forgotten Vasya's mother?
Pyotr was silent.
I would counsel you to wait, said Dunya. Except...
All the summer, Dunya had watched Vasya disappear at dawn and return at twilight. She had watched the wildness grow in Marina's daughter and a remoteness that was new. As though the girl was only half living in her family's world of crops and stock and mending. Dunya had watched and worried and struggled with herself. Now she made a decision. She plunged her hand into her pocket. When she withdrew it, the blue jewel lay nestled upon her palm, incongruous against the worn skin.
Do you remember, Pyotr Vladimirovich? It was a gift for Vasya, said Pyotr harshly. Is this treachery? I bade you give it her.
He eyed the pendant as though it were a serpent.
I have kept it for her, replied Dunya. I begged, and the Winter King said I might. It was too great a burden for a child. Winter King, said Pyotr angrily, are you a child to believe in fairy tales? There is no Winter King. Fairy tales? returned Dunya, an answering anger in her voice. Am I so wicked that I would invent such a lie? I too am a Christian, Pyotr Vladimirovich, but I believe what I see. Whence came this jewel, fit for a Khan, that you brought for your little daughter?
Pyotr, throat working, was silent.
Who gave it to you? Dunya continued. You brought it from Moscow, but I never asked further.
It is a necklace, said Pyotr, but the anger had gone from his voice. Pyotr had tried to forget the pale-eyed man, the blood on Kolya's throat, his men standing insensible.
Was that he, the Winter King?
Now he remembered how quickly he had agreed to give the stranger's trinket to his daughter.
Ancient magic,
it seemed he heard Marina say.
A daughter of my mother's bloodline.
And then softer.
Protect her, Petya. I chose her. She is important. Promise me. Not just a necklace, said Dunya harshly. It is a talisman, may God forgive me. I have seen the Winter King. The necklace is his, and he will come for her. You have seen him?
Pyotr was on his feet. Dunya nodded.
Where did you see him? Where?
Dreaming, said Dunya.
Only dreaming. But he sends the dreams, and they are true. I am to give her the necklace, he says. He will come for her at midwinter. She is no longer a child. But he is deceitful. All his kind are.
The words came out in a rush.
I love Vasya like my own daughter. She is too brave for her own good. I am afraid for her.
Pyotr paced toward the great window and turned back toward Dunya.
Are you telling me the truth, Avdotya Mikhailovna? On my wife's head, do not lie to me. I have seen him, said Dunya again, and you, I think, have seen him too. He has black hair, curling, pale eyes, paler than the sky at midwinter. He has no beard, and he is dressed all in blue. I will not give my daughter to a demon. She is a Christian maid.
The raw fear in Pyotr's voice was new, born of Constantine's sermons.
Then she must have a husband, said Dunya simply. The sooner, the better. Frost demons have no interest in mortal girls wed to mortal men. In the stories, the bird prince and the wicked sorcerer, they only come for the wild maiden. Vasya, said Alyosha, married? That rabbit?
He laughed. The dry barley stalks rustled. He was raking beside his father. There were straws in his brown curls. He had been singing to break the afternoon stillness.
She's a girl still, father. I knocked down a peasant that watched her overlong, but she noticed nothing. Not even when the oaf went about for a week with his face all bruised.
He had knocked down a peasant that called her witch woman as well, but he did not tell his father that.
She has not met a man that caught her fancy, that is all, said Pyotr. But I mean that to change.
Pyotr was brisk, his mind made up.
Kirill Artamonovich is my friend's son. He has a great inheritance, and his father is dead. Vasya is young and healthy, and her dowry is very fine. She will be gone before the snow.
Pyotr bent once more to his raking. Alyosha did not join him.
She will not take kindly to it, father. Kindly or not, she will do as she's told, said Pyotr.
Alyosha snorted.
Vasya, he said, I'd like to see it.
You are going to be married, said Irina to Vasya enviously, and have a fine dowry and go live in a big wooden house and have many children.
She stood beside the rough post and rail fence, but did not lean upon it, so as not to smudge her sarafan. Her long chestnut braid was wrapped in a bright kerchief, and her small hand lay delicate on the wood. Vasya was trimming Buran's hoof, muttering dire threats to the stallion should he choose to move.
He looked as though he was debating which part of her to bite. Irina was rather frightened. Vasya put the hoof down and glanced at her small sister.
"I am not going to be married," she said.
Irina's mouth creased in half-envious disapproval when Vasya vaulted the fence.
"Yes, you are," she said. "A lord is coming. Kolya has gone to bring him. I heard father say it to mother."
Vasya's brow wrinkled. "Well, I suppose I must marry. Someday," she said. She tilted her sister a sideways grin.
"But how am I to catch a man's eye with you about, little bird?"
Irina smiled shyly. Already her beauty was talked of between the villages of their father's domain. But then,
"You will not go into the woods, Vasya. It is nearly supper time. You are all over filth."
The Rusalka was sitting above them, a green shadow along an oak branch. She beckoned. The water dripped down her streaming hair.
"I'll be along presently," said Vasya. "But father says..."
Vasya leaped for a limb, one foot on the trunk, catching the branch overhead in her strong hands. She hooked a knee over it, dangling head down.
"I'll not be late for supper. Don't worry, Irinka."
The next instant, she had disappeared among the leaves. The Rusalka was gaunt and shivering.
"What are you doing?" Vasya said. "What is wrong?"
The Rusalka shivered harder than ever.
"Are you cold?"
It hardly seemed possible. The earth gave back the day's heat, and the breeze was scant.
"No," said the Rusalka. Her lank hair hid her face. "Little girls get cold, not Cherti." "What is that child saying, Vasilisa Petrovna? Will you leave the forest?"
It came to Vasya that the Rusalka was afraid, though it was not easy to know. The inflections of her voice were not like a woman's. Vasya had never thought in those terms before.
"One day I will," she said slowly. "Some day. I must marry and go to my husband's house. But I did not think it would be so soon."
How faint the Rusalka was. The rustling leaves showed through her gaunt face.
"You cannot," said the Rusalka.
Her lips peeled back from her green teeth. The hand that combed her hair jerked so that the water falling down ran from her nose and chin.
"We will not survive the winter. You did not let me kill the hungry man, and your words are failing. You are only a child. Your bits of bread and honey wine cannot sustain the household spirits. Not forever. The bear is awake."
"What bear?"
"The shadow on the wall," said the Rusalka, breathing quickly. "The voice in the dark."
Her face did not move like a human face, but the pupils of her eyes swelled black.
"Beware the dead. You must heed me, Vasya, for I will not come again, not as myself. He will call me, and I will answer. He will have my allegiance, and I will turn against you. I cannot do otherwise. The leaves are falling. Do not leave the forest."
"What do you mean, beware the dead? How will you turn against us?"
But the Rusalka only reached out a hand with such force that her damp, cloudy fingers felt like flesh locked around Vasya's arm.
"The Winter King will help you as you can," she said. "He promised. We all heard it. He is very old and the enemy of your enemy, but you must not trust him."
Questions crowded Vasya's lips so fast they choked her silent. Her eyes met the Rusalka's. The water sprite's shining hair fell around her naked body.
"I trust you," Vasya managed. "You are my friend."
"Be of good heart, Vasilisa Petrovna," said the Rusalka sadly.
And then there was only a tree with stormy silver leaves, as though she'd never been.
"Perhaps I am mad in truth," thought Vasya.
She caught the limb beneath her and dropped to the ground. She was soft on her feet as she ran home through the glorious late summer twilight. All around her, the forest seemed to whisper,
"The shadow on the wall. You cannot trust him. Beware the dead. Beware the dead.
Married, father? The clear green dusk breathed coolness onto the parched and gasping earth, so that the oven fire comforted and did not torment. At noon they had eaten bread only, with curds or pickled mushrooms, for there was no time to spare from the fields. But that night there was stew and pie, roasted fowl, and green things dipped in a little precious salt.
If anyone can be brought to have you, said Pyotr, none too kindly, putting aside his bowl.
Sapphires and pale eyes, threats and half-understood promises thrashed unpleasantly in his skull. Vasya had come into the kitchen with a wet face, and there were distinct signs that she had tried to clean the dirt beneath her nails, but the water had only smeared the grime. She was dressed like a peasant girl in a thin dress of undyed linen, her black hair uncovered and curling. Her eyes were huge and wild and troubled.
It would be much easier to see her married, Pyotr thought irritably, if she would contrive to look more like a woman and less like a peasant child or a wood sprite.
Pyotr watched the successive objections rise to her lips and fall away. All girls married, unless they became nuns. She knew that as well as anyone.
Married? She said again, striving for words. Now?
Again, Pyotr knew a pang. He saw her heavy with child, bowed over an oven, sitting before a loom, the grace gone.
Don't be a fool, Pyotr Vladimirovich.
It is the lot of women.
Pyotr remembered Marina warm and pliant in his arms, but he also remembered her slipping away into the forest, light as a ghost, that same wild look in her eyes.
Who am I to marry, father?
My son was right, Pyotr thought.
Vasya was indeed angry. Her pupils had swelled, and her head was flung back like a filly that will not take the bit. He rubbed his face. Girls were happy to be married. Olga had glowed when her husband put a jewel on her finger and took her away. Maybe Vasya was jealous of her elder sister. But this daughter would never find a husband in Moscow. Might as well put a hawk in a dovecote.
Kirill Artamonovich, said Pyotr. My friend Artamon was rich and his only son inherited. They are great breeders of horses.
Her eyes took up half her face. Pyotr scowled.
It was a good match. She had no business looking stricken.
Where? She whispered. When?
A week to the east on a good horse, said Pyotr. He will come after the harvest.
Vasya's face stilled and set. She turned away. Pyotr added, coaxing,
He is coming here himself. I have sent Kolya to him. He will make you a good husband and give you children.
Why such haste? Vasya snapped.
The bitterness in her voice struck him raw.
Enough, Vasya, he said coldly. You are a woman and he is a rich man. If you wanted the prince like Olga, well, they like their women fatter and less insolent.
He saw the quick stab of hurt before she masked it.
Olya promised she would send for me when I was grown, she said. She said we would live in the palace together.
Better you are married now, Vasya, said Pyotr at once. You can go to your sister after your first son is born.
Vasya bit her lip and stalked away. Pyotr found himself wondering uneasily what Kirill Artamonovich would make of his daughter.
He is not old, Vasya, said Dunya, when Vasya flung herself down by the hearth. He is renowned for his skill in the chase. He will give you strong children.
What is father not telling me? Retorted Vasya. It is too sudden. I could have waited a year. Olya promised to send for me.
Nonsense, Vasya, said Dunya, perhaps over briskly. You are a woman. You are better off with a husband. I am sure Kirill Artamonovich will allow you to go visit your sister.
The green eyes flew up, narrowed.
You know father's reason. Why this haste?
I cannot say, Vasya, said Dunya.
She looked suddenly small and shrunken. Vasya said nothing.
It is for the best, said her nurse. try to understand.
She sank onto the oven bench as though her strength deserted her, and Vasya felt a pang of remorse.
Yes, she said. I am sorry, Dunyashka.
She laid a hand on her nurse's arm, but she did not speak again. When she had swallowed her porridge, she slipped away like a ghost through the door and out into the night. The moon was little thicker than a crescent, light, a glitter of blue. Vasya ran with a panic she could not understand. The life she led made her strong. She bolted and let the cool wind wash the taste of fear from her mouth. But she had not gone far. The firelight of her family's hearth still beat upon her back when she heard someone call her name.
Vasilisa Petrovna!
She almost ran on and let the night swallow her. But where was there to go? She halted. The priest stood in the shadow of the church. It was dark. She would not have known him by his face, but she could not mistake the voice. She did not say anything. She tasted salt and realized there were tears drying on her lips. Konstantin was just leaving the church. He had not seen Vasya leave the house, but he could not mistake her flying shadow. He called before he knew and cursed himself when she stopped. But the sight of her face shook him.
What is it? He said roughly. Why are you crying?
If his voice had been cool and commanding, Vasya would not have answered, but as it was, she said wearily,
I am going to be married.
Konstantin frowned. He saw all at once, as Pyotr had seen, the wild thing brought indoors, busy and breathless, a woman like other women. Like Pyotr, he felt the strange sorrow and shook it away. He stepped closer without thinking, so that he might read her face, and saw with astonishment that she was afraid.
And so, he said, is he a cruel man?
No, Vasya said. No, I don't think so.
It is for the best, was on the tip of the priest's tongue.
But he thought again of years of childbearing and exhaustion. The wildness gone, the hawk's grace chained up. He swallowed.
It is for the best. The wildness was sinful.
But even though he knew the answer, he found himself asking,
Why are you frightened, Vasilisa Petrovna? Do you not know, Batyushka? She said.
Her laugh was soft and desperate.
You were frightened when they sent you here. You felt the forest closing about you like a fist. I could see it in your eyes. But you may leave if you will.
There is a whole wide world waiting for a man of God, and already you have drunk the water of Tsargrad and seen the sun on the sea, while I... He could see the panic rising in her again, and so he strode forward and seized her arm.
Hush, he said. Do not be a fool. You are making yourself frightened.
She laughed again.
You are right, she said. I am foolish. I was born for a cage, after all. Convent or house, what else is there?
You are a woman, said Konstantin. He was still holding her arm. She stepped back and he let her go.
You will accept it in time, he said. You will be happy.
She could barely see his face, but there was a note in his voice that she did not understand. It sounded as though he was trying to convince himself.
No, Vasya said hoarsely. Pray for me if you will, Batyushka, but I must.
And then she was running again between the houses. Konstantin was left swallowing the urge to call her back. His palm burned where he had touched her.
It is for the best, he thought.
It is for the best.
Chapter 16. The Devil by Candlelight. It was an autumn of gray skies and yellow leaves, of sudden rain and unexpected shafts of livid sunlight. The boyar's son came with Kolya after their harvest had been put away safe in cellars and lofts. Kolya sent a messenger ahead of them on the muddy track, and on the day of the Lord's coming, Vasya and Irina spent the morning in the bathhouse. The banik, the bathhouse spirit,
was a pot-bellied creature with eyes like two currants. He leered good-naturedly at the girls.
"Can't you hide under a bench?" said Vasya low, when Irina was in the outer room. "My stepmother will see you. She'll scream."
The Banik grinned. Steam drifted between his teeth. He was barely taller than her knee.
"As you like, but do not forget me this winter, Vasilisa Petrovna. Every season I am less. I do not want to disappear. The old eater is waking. This would not be a good winter to lose your old Banik."
Vasya hesitated, caught.
"But I am going to be married. I am going away. Beware the dead."
Her lips firmed. "I will not forget." His smile widened. The steam wreathed his body until she could not tell mist from flesh. A red light heated the backs of his eyes, the color of hot stones.
"A prophecy, then, Vyadma."
"Why do you call me that?" she whispered. The Banik drifted up to the bench beside her. His beard was the curling steam.
"Because you have your great-grandmother's eyes. Now hear me. Before the end, you will pluck snowdrops at midwinter, die by your own choosing, and weep for a nightingale."
Vasya felt cold despite the steam.
"Why would I choose to die?" "It is easy to die," replied the Banik. "Harder to live. Do not forget me, Vasilisa Petrovna."
And there was only vapor where he had been.
"Holy Mother," Vasya thought. "I've had enough of their mad warnings."
The two girls sat and sweated until they were flushed and shining, beat each other with birch branches, and ladled cold water over their steaming heads. When they were clean, Dunya came with Anna to comb and braid their long hair.
"It is a shame you are so like a boy, Vasya," said Anna,
running a comb of scented wood through Irina's long chestnut curls.
"I hope your husband will not be too disappointed."
She looked sideways at her stepdaughter. Vasya flushed and bit her tongue.
"But such hair," said Dunya tartly. "The finest hair in Rus, Vasochka."
And indeed it was longer and thicker than Irina's, deep black with soft red lights. Vasya managed a smile for her nurse. Irina had been told from babyhood that she was lovely as a princess. Vasya had been an ugly child, often and unfavorably compared with her delicate half-sister. Recently, though, long hours on horseback, where her long limbs were useful, had put Vasya in better charity with herself, and in any case, she was not much given to contemplating her own reflection. The only mirror in the house was a bronze oval belonging to her stepmother. Now, though, every woman in the house seemed to be staring at her, assessing as though she were a goat fattening for market. It occurred to Vasya to wonder if there was something in being beautiful. The two girls were dressed at last. Vasya's head was wrapped in a maiden's headdress, the silver wire hanging down to frame her face. Anna would never let Vasya outshine her own daughter, even if Vasya was the one being married. And so, Irina's headdress and sleeves were embroidered in seed pearls, her little sarafan of pale blue trimmed in white. Vasya wore green and deep blue, no pearls, and a bare hint of white embroidery. The plainness was her own fault. She had left much of the sewing to Dunya, but simplicity suited her. Anna's face soured when she saw her stepdaughter dressed. The two girls emerged into the dvor. The dooryard was mud to the ankles, rain misted gently down. Irina kept close to her mother. Pyotr waited in the dvor already, stiff in fine fur and embroidered boots. Kolya's wife had come with her children. Vasya's small nephew, Seryozha, ran around shouting. A great stain already marred his linen shirt. Father Konstantin stood by, silent.
"It is a strange time for a wedding," said Alyosha, low to Vasya, coming up beside her.
a dry summer, and a small harvest. His brown hair was clean, his short beard combed with scented oil. His blue embroidered shirt matched the sash round his waist.
"You are very lovely, Vasya."
"Don't make me laugh," his sister rejoined. More seriously, she added,
"Yes, and father feels it."
Indeed, though Pyotr looked jovial, the line between his brows showed clear.
"He looks like someone bound to an unpleasant duty. He must be quite desperate to send me away."
She tried to make a joke of it, but Alyosha looked at her with quick understanding.
"He is trying to keep you safe."
"He loved our mother, and I killed her."
Alyosha was silent a moment. "As you say. But truly, Vasochka, he is trying to keep you safe.
The horses have coats like duck down, and the squirrels are still out, eating as though their lives depend on it. It will be a hard winter."
A rider came through the palisade gate and galloped toward the house. The mud flew in great arcs from beneath his horse's feet. He came to a skidding halt and sprang from the saddle. A man in his middle years, not tall but broadly built, weathered and brown-bearded. A hint of irrepressible youth lurked about his mouth. He had all his teeth, and his smile was bright as a boy's. He bowed to Pyotr.
"I am not late, I hope, Pyotr Vladimirovich," he asked, laughing.
The two men clasped forearms.
"No wonder he outstripped Kolya," Vasya thought. Kirill Artamonovich was riding the most magnificent young horse she had ever seen.
Even Buran, a prince among horses, looked rough-hewn next to the sinewy perfection of the roan stallion. She wanted to run her hands over the colt's legs, feel the quality of his bone and muscle.
"I told father this was a bad idea," said Alyosha in her ear.
"What? And why?" said Vasya, preoccupied by the horse. "To marry you off so soon, because blushing maidens are supposed to look covetously upon the lords that vie for their hands, not upon the lord's fine horses."
Vasya laughed. Kirill was bowing to tiny Irina with exaggerated courtesy.
"A rough setting, Pyotr Vladimirovich, to find such a jewel," he said. "Little snowdrop, you ought to go south and bloom among our flowers."
He smiled, and Irina blushed. Anna looked at her daughter with some complacency. Kirill turned toward Vasya, the easy smile still on his lips. It died away quite when he saw her. Vasya thought he must be displeased with her appearance. She raised her chin a defiant fraction.
"All the better. Find another wife if I displease you."
But Alyosha understood his darkening eyes very well. Vasya looked you full in the face. She was more like a warrior unblooded than a housebred girl. And Kirill was staring in fascination. He bowed to her, the smile once more playing about his lips. But it was not the smile he'd given Irina.
"Vasilisa Petrovna," he said, "your brother said you were beautiful. You are not."
She stiffened, and his smile deepened.
"You are magnificent."
His eyes swept her from headdress to slippered feet. Beside her, Alyosha's hand clenched into a fist.
"Are you mad?" hissed Vasya. "He has the right. We are betrothed."
Alyosha was eyeing Kirill very coldly.
"This is my brother," said Vasya hurriedly, "Alexei Petrovich."
"Well met," said Kirill, looking amused.
He was nearly 10 years the elder. His eyes swept Vasya once more, leisurely. Her skin prickled under her clothes. She could hear Alyosha grinding his teeth. At that moment, there came a snort, a shriek, and a splash. They all spun around. Seryozha, Vasya's nephew, had crept to the offside of Kirill's red stallion and tried to clamber into the saddle. Vasya could sympathize. Already she wanted to ride the red colt, but the unexpected weight had left the young stallion rearing and wild-eyed. Kirill ran to seize his horse's bridle. Pyotr heaved his grandson from the mud and clouted him across the ear. At that moment, Kolya came galloping into the dvor, and his arrival put a cap on the confusion. Seryozha's mother carried the boy away, howling. Far down the road, the first wagon of the rest of the party appeared, vivid against the gray autumn forest. The women hastily went into the house to dish up the noon meal.
"It is only natural that he preferred Irina, Vasya," said Anna, while they wrestled an immense stew pot. "A mongrel dog will never equal a purebred. At least your mother is dead, all the easier to forget your unfortunate ancestry. You're strong as a horse, that counts for something."
The domovoy crept out of the oven, wavering but determined. Vasya had surreptitiously spilled some meat for him.
"Look, stepmother," said Vasya. "Is that the cat?"
Anna looked, and her face turned the color of clay. She swayed where she stood. The domovoy frowned at her, and she promptly swooned. Vasya dodged, clutching the scalding pot. She saved the stew. But the same could not be said for Anna Ivanovna. Her knees buckled, and she hit the hearthstones with a satisfying crack.
"Did you like him, Vasya?" asked Irina in bed that night.
Vasya was half asleep. She and Irina had been up before the sun to ready themselves, and the feasting that night had gone late. Kirill Artamonovich had sat beside Vasya and drunk from her cup. Her betrothed had fleshy hands and a trick of laughing so that the walls seemed to shake. She liked the size of him, but not the insolence. "He is a goodly man," Vasya said, but she wished to all the saints that he would disappear.
"He is handsome," agreed Irina. "His smile is kind."
Vasya rolled over, frowning. In Moscow, girls were not allowed to mingle with suitors, but things were freer in the north. "His smile might be kind," she said, "but his horse is afraid of him." When the feast wound down, she had slipped away to the barn. Kirill's colt, Ogon, had been put in a stall. He could not be trusted in pasture. Irina laughed.
"How do you know what the horse thinks?"
"I know," said Vasya. "Besides, he is old, little bird. Dunya says he is nearly 30.
"But he is rich. You will have jewels and meat every day." "You marry him then," said Vasya tolerantly, poking her sister in the stomach. "And you will be as fat as a squirrel and sit all day sewing atop the oven."
Irina giggled.
"Maybe we will see each other when we are married, if our husbands do not live far apart."
"I'm sure they won't," said Vasya.
"You can save some of your fat meats for me when I come begging with my beggar husband while you are married to a great lord."
Irina giggled again.
"But it is you who are marrying a great lord, Vasya."
Vasya did not answer. She did not speak again. At length, Irina gave up. She curled up against her sister and fell asleep. But Vasya lay long awake. "He has charmed my family, but his horse fears his hand. Beware the dead. It will be a hard winter. You must not leave the forest." The thoughts raced like water, and she was borne on the current. But she was young and weary, and eventually she too rolled over and slept. The days passed in a round of games and feasting. Kirill Artamonovich filled Vasya's bowl at supper and teased her through the kitchen door. His body gave off an animal heat. Vasya was angry to find herself blushing beneath his gaze. At night she lay awake, wondering how all that warmth would feel between her hands. But his laughter did not reach his eyes. Fear rose at odd moments to seize her by the throat. The days wore by, and Vasya could not understand herself.
"You must marry," the women scolded. "All girls marry. At least he is not old, and he is well favored besides. Why then be afraid?"
But afraid she was, and she avoided her betrothed whenever she could, pacing back and forth, a bird in a shrinking cage.
"Why, father," said Alyosha to Pyotr, not for the first time at the start of yet another raucous supper.
The long, dim room reeked of furs and mead, roast meats, pottage, and sweating humanity. The kasha went round in a great bowl. The mead was dipped out and tossed back. Their neighbors packed the room. The house overflowed now, and visitors crammed the peasants' huts.
3 days until she is married. We must honor our guest, said Pyotr.
Why is she getting married now? Retorted his son. Can she not wait a year? Why, after a hard winter and a hard summer, must we waste food and drink on these?
This gesture took in the long room where their guests busily demolished the fruit of a summer's labor.
Because it must be, Pyotr snapped. If you want to make yourself useful, convince your mad sister not to geld her husband on their wedding night. He is a bull, that Kirill, said Alyosha shortly. He has got 5 children on peasant girls, and he thinks nothing of flirting with the farmer's wives while he stays in your house, no less. If my sister sees fit to geld her husband, father, she would have reason, and I would not dissuade her.
As if by some unspoken accord, they looked to where the couple in question sat side by side. Kirill was talking to Vasya, his gestures broad and imprecise. Vasya was eyeing him with an expression that made both Pyotr and Alyosha nervous. Kirill did not seem to notice.
And there I was alone, Kirill said to Vasya.
He refilled their cup, sloshing a bit. His lips left a ring of grease round the rim.
My back was to a rock, and the boar was charging. My men had scattered, save for the dead one, with a great red hole in him.
This was not the first narrative featuring the heroics of Kirill Artamonovich. Vasya's mind had begun to wander. Where is the priest? Father Constantine had not come to the feast, and it was unlike him to keep to himself.
The boar came for me, said Kirill. Its hooves shook the earth. I commended my soul to God. And died there with blood in your mouth, Vasya thought in disgust. I should have been so fortunate.
She laid a hand on his arm and looked up at him with an expression she hoped was piteous.
No more. I cannot bear it.
Kirill eyed her, puzzled. Vasya shuddered all over. I cannot bear to know the rest. I fear I will faint, Kirill Artamonovich. Kirill looked nonplussed.
Dunya has much stronger nerves than I, said Vasya. I think you should finish the story in her hearing.
There was nothing wrong with Dunya's ears, or Vasya's nerves, for that matter. The old lady glanced resignedly heavenward and shot Vasya a warning look. But Vasya had the bit between her teeth, and even her father's glare from down the table would not turn her. Now, Vasya rose with theatrical grace and seized a loaf from the table. Now, if you will forgive me, I must fulfill a pious duty. Kirill opened his mouth to protest, but Vasya made a hasty reverence, slipped the loaf into her sleeve, and bolted. Outside the packed hall, the house was cool and quiet. She stood in the dvor for a long moment, breathing. Then she went and scratched upon the priest's door.
Come in, said Constantine, after a chilly pause.
The whole room seemed to quiver with candlelight. He was painting by the glow. A rat had gnawed the crust that lay untouched beside him. The priest did not turn when Vasya opened the door.
Father, bless, she said. I have brought you bread.
Constantine stiffened.
Vasilisa Petrovna.
He put down his brush and made the sign of the cross.
May the Lord bless you. Are you ill that you do not feast with us? Asked Vasya.
I fast.
Better to eat. There will not be food like this all winter.
Constantine said nothing. Vasya replaced the gnawed crust with a new loaf. The silence stretched out, but she did not go.
Why did you give me your cross? Asked Vasya abruptly, after we met at the lake.
His jaw set, but he did not at once reply. In truth, he hardly knew. Because she had moved him. Because he hoped the symbol could reach her when he could not. Because he had wanted to touch her hand
and look her in the face, disquiet her, perhaps see her fidget and simper like other girls, help him forget his wicked fascination. Because he could never look at his cross again without seeing her hand around it.
"The Holy Cross will make your way straight," said Constantine at last. "Will it?"
The priest was silent. At night now, he dreamed of the woman in the lake. He could never make out her face. But in his dreams, her hair was black. It snapped and slid against her naked flesh. Awake, Constantine spent long hours in prayer, trying to carve the image from his mind, but he could not. For every time he saw Vasya, he knew the woman in his dream had her eyes. He was haunted, ashamed, her fault for tempting him. But in 3 days, she would be gone.
"Why are you here, Vasilisa Petrovna?"
His voice came out loud and ragged, and he was angry with himself.
"The storm is coming," Vasya thought. "Beware the dead. Fear first, then fire, then famine. Your fault. We had faith in God before you came, and faith in our house spirits also, and all was well."
If the priest left, then perhaps her people would be safe once more.
"Why do you stay here?" Vasya said. "You hate the fields and the forest and the silence. You hate our rude, bare church. Yet you are still here. No one would fault you for going."
A dull flush crept across Constantine's cheekbones. His hand fumbled among his paints.
"I have a task, Vasilisa Petrovna. I must save you from yourselves. God has punishments for those who stray."
"A self-appointed task," said Vasya, "in service of your own pride. Why is it for you to say what God wants? The people would never revere you so if you had not made them afraid."
"You are an ignorant country maid. What do you know?" snapped Constantine.
"I believe the evidence of my eyes," Vasya said. "I have seen you speak. I have seen my people afraid. And you know what I say is true. You are shaking." He had picked up a bowl of half-mixed color. The warm wax within shivered. Constantine let it go abruptly. She came nearer and nearer yet. The candlelight brought out the flecks of gold in her eyes. His glance strayed to her mouth.
"Demon, get you gone."
But her voice was a young girl's, with a soft note of pleading.
"Why not go back to Moscow? Or Vladimir, or Suzdal? Why linger here? The world is wide, and our corner so very small." "God gave me a task."
He bit off each word, almost spitting.
"We are men and women," she retorted. "We are not a task. Go back to Moscow and save folk there."
She was standing too near. His hand shot out. He struck her across the face. She stumbled back, cradling her cheek. He took 2 quick steps forward so that he was looking down at her, but she stood her ground. His hand was raised to strike again, but he drew breath and forbore. It was beneath him to strike her. He wanted to seize her, kiss her, hurt her. He did not know what.
"Demon. Get out, Vasilisa Petrovna," he said through gritted teeth. "Don't presume to lecture me, and don't come here again."
She retreated to the door, but she turned back with one hand on the latch. Her braid followed the line of her throat. The scarlet handprint stood out livid on her cheek.
"As you wish," she said. "It is a cruel task to frighten people in God's name. I leave it to you."
She hesitated and added very softly,
"However, Batyushka, I am not afraid."
After she left, Constantine paced to and fro. His shadow leaped before him, and the hand that had struck her burned. Fury closed his throat.
"She will be gone before the snow, gone and long gone, my shame and my failure, but better than having her here."
candle guttered where it stood before his icons, and the flame threw ragged shadows.
She will be gone. She must be gone.
The voice came from the earth, from the candlelight, from his own breast. It was soft and clear and shining.
Peace be with you, it said, though I see you are troubled.
Constantine stopped dead.
Who is that?
Wanting despite yourself and hating where you love, the voice sighed.
Oh, you are beautiful.
Who is speaking? Snapped Constantine. Do you mock me?
I do not mock, came the ready reply. I am a friend, a master, a savior.
The voice throbbed with compassion. The priest spun, seeking.
Come out, he said.
He forced himself to stand still.
Show yourself.
What is this? The voice held a hint now of anger. Doubts, my servant? Don't you know who I am? The room was bare, except for the bed and the icons, and the shadows collected in the corners. Constantine stared into these until his eyes smarted. There. What was that? A shadow that did not move with the firelight. No, that was just his own shadow cast by the candle. There was no one outside. There was no one behind the door. Then who? Constantine's glance sought his icons. He looked deep into their strange, solemn faces. His own face changed.
Father, he whispered. Lord, angels, after all your silence, do you speak to me at last?
He shook in every limb. He strained all his senses, willing the voice to speak again.
Can you doubt it, my child? Said the voice, gentle again. You have always been my loyal servant.
The priest began to weep, open-eyed, soundless. He fell to his knees.
I have watched you long, Konstantin Nikonovich, continued the voice. You have labored bravely on my behalf. But now there is this girl who tempts and defies you.
Constantine clasped his hands together. My shame, he said feverishly. I cannot save her alone. She is possessed. She is a she-devil. I pray that in your wisdom you will show her light.
She will learn many lessons, replied the voice. Many. Many. Have no fear. I stand with you, and you will never again be alone. The world will fall to your feet and know my wonders through your lips, because you have been loyal.
It seemed that trumpets must play when that voice spoke. Constantine shuddered with pleasure, the tears still falling.
Only never leave me, Lord, he said. I have always been faithful.
He clenched his fists so tightly, his nails made furrows in the skin of his hands.
Be faithful, said the voice, and I will never leave you.
Chapter 17. A Horse Called Fire. Kirill Artamonovich loved above all to hunt the long-tusked northern boars swifter than horses. The day before his wedding, he called for a boar hunt.
It will while away the time, he said to Pyotr, with a wink at Vasya, who said nothing.
But Pyotr made no objection. Kirill Artamonovich was a famous hunter, and pig meat in the autumn was a fine thing, fattened on chestnut mast. A good haunch would grace the wedding feast and bring color to his daughter's pale face. The whole household rose before dawn. The boar spears lay already in a shining heap. The dogs had heard the sound of sharpening and paced their kennels all night, whining. Vasya was up before anyone else. She did not take food, but went to the stable where the horses pawed anxiously at the noise from the dogs outside. Kirill's young roan stallion trembled with each new sound. Vasya went to him and found the Vasila there, perched on the colt's back. Vasya smiled at the little creature. The stallion snorted at her and pinned his ears.
You have bad manners,
Vasya told him. But I suppose Kirill Artamonovich drags you around by the mouth.
The colt put his ears forward.
You do not look like a horse.
Vasya grinned. Thank God. Do you not wish to go hunting?
The horse considered.
I like running, but the pig smells foul, and the man will strike me if I am afraid. I'd rather graze in the field.
Vasya laid a comforting hand on the horse's neck. Kirill was going to ruin the beautiful colt, little more than a foal, if he kept on. The colt bumped her chest with his nose. Water and greenish slime dribbled onto her dress.
Now I'm more of a scarecrow than usual, Vasya remarked, to no one in particular. Anna Ivanovna will be delighted.
The pig won't hurt you if you're quick, she added to Ogon. And you are the quickest thing in the world, my beauty. You need not fear.
The colt said nothing, but put his head in her arms. Vasya rubbed his silky ears and sighed. She would have liked nothing better than a wild ride through autumn forest, preferably on the long-legged Ogon, who looked as though he could outrun a hare in an open field. Instead, she was to go to the kitchen, knead bread, and listen to the gossip of a bevy of visiting women. All this while Irina showed off her many perfections and Vasya tried not to burn anything.
Ordinarily, I would curse the maid for a fool that got so near my horse, said a voice from behind her.
Ogon threw his head up, nearly breaking Vasya's nose.
But you have a hand with beasts, Vasilisa Petrovna.
Kirill Artamonovich came toward them, smiling. He caught the colt by his robe halter.
Hush, mad thing, he said.
The colt rolled his eyes but stood, shivering.
You are abroad early, my lord, said Vasya, recovering.
As are you, Vasilisa Petrovna.
A breath made clouds. The stable was chilly.
There is much to do, said Vasya. The women will ride to meet you after the kill, if the day is fine, and tonight we are feasting.
He grinned.
No need to excuse yourself, Dyevushka. I think it a fine thing in a girl to rise early, and to interest herself in a man's talk.
He had a dimple on one side of his mouth.
I'll not tell your father that I found you here.
Vasya regained her composure.
Tell him if you will, she said.
He smiled.
I like your spirit.
She shrugged.
Your sister is prettier than you, he added musingly. She will be an easy wife in a few years' time, a little flower. Not a girl to trouble a man's nights. But you!
Kirill reached out, pulled her to him, and ran a hand down her back in an assessing sort of way.
Too many bones, he said. But I like a strong girl, and you will not die in childbed.
He handled her confidently, with the expectation of being obeyed.
Will you like making me sons?
He kissed her before she knew, while she was still bewildered by the strength in his hands. His kiss was like his touch, firm, with a sort of proficient enjoyment. Vasya shoved at him, to little effect. He tilted her face up, digging his fingers into the soft place behind her jaw. Her head swam. He smelled of musk and mead and horses. His hand was very large, splayed against her back. His other hand slid over her shoulder and breast and hip. Whatever he found seemed to please him. When he let her go, his chest heaved and his nostrils flared like a stallion's. Vasya stood still, swallowing her nausea. She looked up into his face.
I am a mare to him, she thought suddenly and clearly. And if a mare will not yield to harness, well, he will break her.
Kirill's smile slipped a fraction. She could not know how much he had seen of her pride and scorn. His eyes strayed again to her mouth, the shape of her body, and she knew he saw her fear as well. The brief unease left his face. He reached for her again, but Vasya was quicker. She struck his hand aside, ran from the stable, and did not look back. When she reached the kitchen, she was so pale that Dunya made her sit by the fire and drink hot wine until a little color came back into her face. All that day, a cold mist rose from the earth, winding itself about the trees. The hunt made a kill near midday. Vasya, wielding a bread paddle with grim competence, heard faintly the shriek of the dying animal. It matched her mood. The women left the house at gray noontide, with men to lead the laden pack horses. Konstantin rode out with them, his face pale and exalted in the autumn light. Men and women watched him with reverence and furtive admiration. Vasya, avoiding the priest, stayed with Irina near the back of the cavalcade, shortening her mare's long stride to match Irina's pony. The mist crept over the earth. The women complained of chill and drew their cloaks about them. Suddenly, Mish reared. Even Irina's placid beast shied, so that the child gave a stifled scream and clutched her reins. Vasya hastily brought the mare down and caught the pony's bridle. She followed Misha's ears with her eyes. A white-skinned creature stood between two tall birch trunks. He was man-shaped and light-eyed. His hair was the tangled undergrowth of the forest. He cast no shadow. "It's all right," Vasya said to Mish. "That does not eat horses, only foolish travelers." The mare swiveled her ears, but hesitantly began to walk again. "Leshi, Lesovik," murmured Vasya as they rode past. She bowed from the waist. He was the wood guard, the Leshi, and he seldom came so close to men. "I would speak with you, Vasilisa Petrovna." The wood guard's voice was the whisper of branches at dawn. "Presently," she said, mastering her surprise. Beside her, Irina squeaked. "Who are you talking to, Vasya?" "No one," said Vasya. "Myself." Irina was quiet. Vasya sighed inwardly. Irina would tell her mother. They found the hunters a little way into the forest, taking their ease under a great tree. They had already hung the pig, a sow, by her hocks from a massive limb. Her slit throat drained blood into a bucket. The wood rang with laughter and boasting. Seryozha, who considered himself quite grown, had only with difficulty been persuaded to ride with the women. Now he leaped from his pony and darted over to stare round-eyed at the hanging pig. Vasya slid from Misha's back and gave the reins into a servant's hand.
"A fine beast we have taken, is it not, Vasilisa Petrovna?"
The voice came from her elbow. She whirled round. The blood had caked in the lines of Kirill's palms, but his boyish smile was undimmed.
"The meat will be welcome," said Vasya. "I will save the liver for you."
His glance was speculative.
"You could use fattening."
"You are generous," said Vasya. She bowed her head and slipped away, like a maiden too modest for speech. The women were extracting a cold meal from laden bundles. Carefully, Vasya worked herself closer and closer to a little grove of birch, then slipped among the trees and disappeared. She did not see Kirill smile to himself and follow. Leshia were dangerous. When they wished, they could lead travelers in circles until they collapsed. Sometimes the travelers were wise enough to put their clothes on backward for protection, but not often. They mostly died. Vasya found him at the center of a little copse of birch. The Leshi looked down at her with glittering eyes. "What news?" said Vasya. The Leshi made a grinding sound of displeasure. "Your people come with clamor to fright my woods and kill my creatures. They would have asked my leave once." "We ask your leave again," said Vasya quickly. They had trouble enough without angering the wood guard. She untied her embroidered kerchief and laid it in his hand. He turned it over in his long, twiggy fingers. "Forgive us," said Vasya, "and do not forget me." "I would ask the same," said the wood guard, mollified. "We are fading, Vasilisa Petrovna. Even I, who watched these trees grow from saplings, your people waver, and so the Cherti wither. If the bear comes now, you are unprotected. There will be a reckoning. Beware the dead." What does it mean, beware the dead?
The Leshy bowed his hoary head.
3 signs, and the dead are 4th, he said.
Then he disappeared, and all she heard were the birds singing in the rustling wood.
Enough of this, Vasya muttered, not really expecting a reply. Why can none of you speak plainly? What are you afraid of?
Kirill Artamonovich emerged from between the trees.
Vasya stiffened her spine. Are you lost, my lord?
He snorted.
No more than you, Vasilisa Petrovna. I have never seen a girl walk so light in the woods. But you should not go unprotected.
She said nothing.
Walk with me, he said.
There was no way to refuse. They walked side by side through the thick, wet loam, while the leaves drifted down around them.
You will like my lands, Vasilisa Petrovna, Kirill said.
The horses run across fields larger than the eye can tell, and merchants bring us jewels from Vladimir, the city of the Mother of God. A vision seized Vasya then, not of a lord's fine house, but of herself on a galloping horse in a land unbounded by forest. She stood a moment, frozen and far away. Kira lifted and smoothed her long braid where it lay over her breast. Startled back to herself, she flicked it out of his grip. He caught her hair, smiling in a fist, and drew her nearer.
Come. None of that.
She backed up, but he followed her, wrapping her braid round his hand.
I will teach you to want me.
His mouth sought hers. A piercing shriek split the mid-afternoon silence. Kirill let her go. There was a brown flash between the trees, and Vasya took off running, cursing her skirts. But even hampered, she was lighter than the big man behind her. She darted round a holly bush and skidded to a horrified halt. Seryozha was clinging to Misha's neck, and the brown mare bucked and spun like a yearling colt. A ring of white showed all around her frantic eye. Vasya could not understand it. The boy had ridden the mare before, and Mish was very sensible. But now she jumped as though 3 devils sat her back. Irina was pressed up against a tree at the edge of the clearing, both hands over her mouth.
I told him, she wailed. I told him he was being bad, but he said he was grown, that he could do as he liked. He wanted to race the horses. He wouldn't listen.
The alder clearing was full of shadows, too big for the noon light. One of them seemed to lurch forward. For a second, Vasya could have sworn she saw a madman's grin and a single winking eye.
Mish, be still, she said to the horse.
The mare came plunging to a stop, ears pricked. There was a split second of stillness.
Seryozha, said Vasya.
Now, Kirill came crashing through the undergrowth. In the same instant, the shadow seemed to spring from 3 places at once. The mare's nerve broke again. She wheeled and bolted. Her long legs dug into the forest track, and she almost scraped her rider off in her wild career between tree trunks. Seryozha screamed, but he was still in the saddle, clinging to the horse's neck. Somewhere, someone was laughing. Vasya ran for the other horses, seizing her belt knife. Kirill was behind her, but she was faster. She flashed past her astonished father and reached Ogon first.
What are you doing? Shouted Kirill.
Vasya did not answer. The colt was tied, but a stroke split the rope, and Evald saw her settled under his bare back, fingers wound into the red mane. The horse bolted in pursuit. Kirill was left with his mouth hanging open. Vasya leaned forward, catching the stallion's rhythm, feet locked around his barrel. She wished she'd had time to untangle her layers of skirt. It swept through the trees like a thunderstorm. Vasya bent low over the horse's neck. A fallen log loomed in their way. Vasya took a deep breath. Ogon cleared the barrier, sure-footed as a stag. They burst out of the forest and into a muddy field scarce 10 horse lengths behind the runaway. Miraculously, Seryozha was still clinging to Misha's neck. He did not have much choice. A fall at speed would be fatal. the going made treacherous by hundreds of half-hidden stumps. Ogon gained steadily. He was much the faster horse, and the mare was racing in panicked zigzags, twisting in an effort to throw the child from her back. Vasya shouted at Mish to stop, but the mare did not hear, or she did not heed. Vasya cried encouragement to Seryozha, but the wind snatched the words away. She and Ogon slowly closed the gap. Foam flew back from the horse's lips. There was a ditch coming up at the far side of the field, dug to drain rainwater off the barley. Even if Mish could jump it, Seryozha would never stay on her back. Vasya screamed at Ogon. A series of powerful leaps brought him level with the runaway. The ditch was coming up fast. Vasya reached out one-armed for her nephew. "Let go! Let go!" she shouted, grabbing a fistful of his shirt. Seryozha had time for one panic-stricken glance, then Vasya yanked him clear and slung him face down over Ogon's red withers. The boy had a handful of black mane clutched in each fist. Simultaneously, Vasya shifted her weight, urging the colt to turn before the looming edge. Somehow, the stallion managed, gathering his hindquarters and lunging sideways on a course that took him parallel to the ditch. He came to a sliding, slithering halt a few paces later, trembling all over. Mish was not so lucky. In her panic, she blundered into the ditch and now lay thrashing at the bottom. Vasya slid from Ogon's back, staggering as her legs tried to buckle beneath her. She pulled her sobbing nephew down and looked him over quickly. His nose and lip were bloody from the stallion's iron-hard shoulder. "Seryozha," she said. "Sergei Nikolaevich, you're all right. Hush." Her nephew was sobbing and trembling and giggling all at once. Vasya slapped him across his bloody face. He shuddered and fell silent, and she hugged him tight. Behind them came the sound of a horse struggling. "Ogon," said Vasya. The stallion was behind her, flecked with foam. "Stay here." The horse twitched an assenting ear. Vasya let her nephew go and half ran, half slid to the bottom of the ditch. Mish lay in a foot of water, but Vasya ignored it. She knelt beside the mare's foam-streaked head. Miraculously, the horse's legs weren't broken. "You're all right," Vasya whispered. "You're all right." She matched the mare's breathing once and again. Suddenly, Mish lay quiet under her burning hand. Vasya stood up and drew away. The mare collected herself, clumsy as a foal, and came spraddle-legged to her feet. Vasya, shaking now with reaction, wrapped her arms around the horse's neck. "Fool," she whispered, "what possessed you?" "I saw a shadow," said the mare, "and it had teeth." There was no time for more. A confusion of voices came from the top of the ditch. A small avalanche of rocks heralded the appearance of Kirill Artamonovich. Mish shied. Kirill was staring. Vasya's face burned. "The mares had a fright," the girl said hurriedly, catching hold of Misha's bridle. "You smell of blood, Kirill Artamonovich. Best you stay up there." Kirill had no intention of sliding down into the mud and water, but even so, Vasya's words did not sweeten him. "You stole my horse." Vasya had the grace to look abashed. "Who taught you to ride like that?" Vasya swallowed, measuring his horrified expression. "My father taught me," she said. Her betrothed looked gratifyingly shocked. She scrambled out of the ditch. The mare followed her like a kitten. The girl paused at the top. Kirill gave her a stony stare. "Perhaps I can ride all your horses when we are married," Vasya said innocently. Kirill did not answer. Vasya shrugged and only then realized how tired she was. Her legs were weak as reed stems, and her left shoulder, the arm she had used to yank Seryozha over Ogon's back, ached. A cluster of riders was racing across the ragged field. Pyotr led them on sure-footed Buran. Vasya's brothers rode at his heel. Kolya was first off his horse.
He leaped down and ran to his son, who was weeping still.
Seryozha, are you all right? He demanded. Sinok, what happened? Seryozha!
The child did not answer. Kolya turned on Vasya.
What happened?
Vasya did not know what to say. She stammered something. Her father and Alyosha dismounted in Kolya's wake. Pyotr's urgent glance darted from her to Seryozha, to Ogon and Mish.
Are you all right, Vasya? He said.
Yes, Vasya managed. She flushed. Their neighbors, all men, were galloping up now. They stared. Vasya was suddenly, flinchingly aware of her bare head and torn skirts, her dirty face. Her father stepped across to murmur a quiet word to Kolya, who was holding his weeping son. Vasya had let fall her cloak in her wild charge. Now Alyosha slid off his horse and put his own about her.
Come on, fool, he said, while she fastened his cloak gratefully. Best get you out of view.
Vasya recalled her pride and lifted her chin a stubborn fraction.
I am not ashamed. Better to have done something than see Seryozha dead of a cracked skull.
Pyotr heard her.
Go with your brother, he growled, rounding on her unexpectedly. Now, Vasya!
Vasya stared at her father, and then, without a word, let Alyosha boost her into the saddle. Muttering swelled among their neighbors. They were all gazing avidly. Vasya clenched her fists and refused to drop her eyes. But their neighbors did not have much time to gape. Alyosha swung on behind her, spurred his beast, and galloped away.
Are you ashamed, Lyoshka? Asked Vasya with heavy scorn. Will you lock me in the cellar now? Better our nephew dead than I bring shame on the family?
Don't be an idiot, said Alyosha shortly. This will blow over faster if they don't have your torn dress to stare at.
Vasya said nothing. More gently, her brother added, I'm taking you to Dunya. You looked ready to fold up where you stood.
I won't deny it.
Her voice had softened.
Alyosha hesitated. Vasochka, what did you do? I knew you could ride, but like that? On that mad red colt?
The horses taught me, Vasya said after a pause. I used to take them out of the pasture. She didn't elaborate. Her brother was silent a long time.
We would be bringing our nephew back dead or broken if you hadn't rescued him, he said slowly. I know it, and I am grateful for it. Father too, surely.
Thank you, Vasya whispered. But, he added in tones of light irony,
I fear you are for a hut in the woods if you don't want to take the veil or marry a farmer. Your warrior's ways have quite put off our neighbor. Kirill was humiliated when you took his horse.
Vasya laughed, but there was a hard note in it.
I am glad, she said. I am saved from running away before my wedding. I'd have married a peasant before that Kirill Artamonovich, but father is angry.
Just as the house came in sight, Pyotr rode up beside them. He looked grateful and exasperated and angry and something darker. It might have been worry. He cleared his throat.
You aren't hurt, Vasochka.
Vasya hadn't heard that endearment from him since she was small.
No, she said, but I am sorry to have shamed you, father.
Pyotr shook his head but did not speak. It was a long pause.
Thank you, Pyotr said at last, for my grandson.
Vasya smiled.
We should be grateful to Ogon, she said, feeling more cheerful, and that Seryozha had the presence of mind to hold on as long as he did.
They rode home in silence. Vasya quickly took herself off to hide in the bathhouse and steam her aching limbs. But Kirill went to Pyotr that evening at dinner.
I thought I was getting a well-bred maiden, not a wild creature.
Vasya is a good girl, said Pyotr. Headstrong, but that can be,
Kirill snorted. Black magic might have held that girl on my horse's back, but no mortal art. Strength only, and wildness, said Pyotr a little desperately. She will give you strong sons.
At what price? Said Kirill Artamonovich darkly.
I want a woman in my house, not a witch or a wood sprite. Besides, she shamed me before all your company."
And though Pyotr tried to reason with him, he would not be swayed. Pyotr rarely beat his children, but when Kirill broke off his betrothal, he thrashed Vasya all the same, mostly to assuage his own fear for her.
Can she not do as she's told for once in her life? They only come for the wild maiden.
Vasya bore it dry-eyed and gave him only a look of reproach before she walked stiffly away. He did not see her weeping afterward, curled between Misha's forefeet. But there was no wedding. At dawn, Kirill Artamonovich rode away.
Chapter 18. A Guest for the Waning Year. When Kirill had gone, Anna Ivanovna went again to her husband. Already the long nights hemmed in the autumn days. The household rose in the dark and supped by firelight. That night, Pyotr sat wakeful before the oven. His children had sought their beds, but sleep eluded him. The embers of the banked fire filled the room with red. Pyotr stared into the shimmering maw and thought of his daughter. Anna had her mending on her lap, but she was not sewing. Pyotr never looked up, and so he did not see his wife's face, hard and bloodless.
"So Vasilisa will not marry," she said.
Pyotr started. His wife spoke with authority. She reminded him for the first time of her father, and her words echoed his thought.
"No man of good birth will have her," she continued. "Will you give her to a peasant?"
Pyotr was silent. He had been turning the question over in his mind. It went against his pride to give his daughter to a base-born man, but ever in his ear rang Dunya's warning, "Better anything than a frost demon." "Marina," thought Pyotr, "you left me this mad girl, and I love her well. She is braver and wilder than any of my sons. But what good is that in a woman? I swore I'd keep her safe, but how can I save her from herself?"
"She must go to a convent," Anna said. "The sooner the better. What other choice is there? No man of decent birth will have her. She is possessed. She steals horses. She made the horse go mad. She risked her nephew's life for sport."
Pyotr, staring in astonishment at his wife, found her almost beautiful in her steady purpose.
"A convent?" said Pyotr. "Vasya?"
He wondered briefly why he was so surprised. Unmarriageable daughters went to convents every day, but a more unlikely nun than Vasya he had never seen. Anna clenched her hands. Her eyes seized and held him.
"A life among holy sisters might save her immortal soul."
Pyotr remembered again the face of the stranger in Moscow. Talisman or no, a frost demon could not very well come for a girl vowed to God. But still he hesitated. Vasya would never go willingly. Father Konstantin sat in the shadows beside Anna. His face was drawn, his eyes dark as sloes.
"What say you, Batyushka?" Pyotr said. "My daughter has frightened her suitors. Shall I send her to a convent?"
"You have little choice, Pyotr Vladimirovich," Konstantin said. His voice was slow and hoarse. "She will not fear God, and she will not listen to reason. The Ascension is a convent for high-born maidens within the walls of the Moscow Kremlin. The sisters there would take her."
Anna's mouth tightened. Once, long ago, she had dreamed of entering that convent. Pyotr hesitated.
"The walls of the Kremlin are strong," added Konstantin. "She would be safe and she would not go hungry."
"Well, I will think on it," said Pyotr, torn.
She could go with the sledges when he sent his tribute forth. But what man could he send to give warning of her coming? His daughter could not be delivered like an unwanted parcel, and it was late in the year for messengers.
Olya. He could send her to Olya, and she would arrange it. But no. Vasya must be wed or behind convent walls before midwinter. At midwinter he will come for her. Vasya. Vasya in a convent? A veil over her black hair? A virgin until she died? But her soul. Above all there was her soul. She would have peace and plenty. She would pray for her family. And she would be safe from demons. But she will not go willingly. It would grieve her so. Constantine watched Pyotr struggle and was silent. He knew that God was on his side. Pyotr would be persuaded and means would be found. And indeed, the priest was right. 3 nights later, Vasya brought home a wet and sneezing monk whom she had found lost in the woods. She dragged him in a little before sundown, in the midst of a downpour. Dunya was telling a story. "Their father fell sick with longing," she said. "So Prince Alexei and Prince Dmitri set out to find the bright-winged firebird. Long they rode, over 3 times 9 kingdoms, until they came to a place where the road split. Beside the way lay a stone carved with words." The outer door thundered open, and Vasya strode into the room, holding a big, young, bedraggled monk by the sleeve. "This is Brother Rodion," she said. "He was lost in the forest. He has come from Moscow. Sasha sent him to us." Instantly, the startled house sprang into motion. The monk must be dried and fed, a new robe found, mead put in his hand. Dunya, in all the hurry, still had time to make a protesting Vasya change her wet clothes and sit near the fire to dry her sopping hair. All the while, the monk was pelted with questions of the weather in Moscow, the jewels the court women wore to church, the horses of Tatar wardlords. Above all, they asked him about the princess of Serpukhov and brother Alexander. The questions flew so thick, the monk could hardly answer. Pyotr intervened at last. He pushed his children aside. "Peace, all of you," he said. "Let him eat." The kitchen slowly quieted. Dunya took up her distaff, Irina her needle. Brother Rodion applied himself single-mindedly to his supper. Vasya took up a mortar and pestle and began to pound dried herbs. Dunya resumed her story. "Beside the way lay a stone carved with words. Who rides straight forward shall meet both hunger and cold. Who rides to the right shall live though his horse shall die. Who rides to the left shall die though his horse shall live." None of these sounded at all pleasant, so the two brothers turned aside, pitched their tents in a green wood, and whiled away the time, forgetting why they had come. Prince Ivan rode to the right, Vasya thought. She had heard the story 1,000 times. The gray wolf killed his horse. He wept to see it slain. But the stories never say what awaited him had he gone straight or left. Pyotr sat in close conversation with Brother Rodion on the other side of the kitchen. Vasya wished she could hear what they were saying, but the rain still thudded on the roof. She had gone out foraging at first light, anything, even a drenching, for a few hours in the clean air. The house oppressed her. Anna Ivanovna and Konstantin and even her father watched her with looks she could not read. The villagers muttered when she passed. No one had forgotten the incident with Kirill's horse. She had found the young monk riding in circles on his strong white mule. Odd, Vasya thought, that she had found him alive. In her wandering, the girl had come across bones, but never a living man. The forest was perilous to travelers. The Leshy would lead them in circles until they collapsed, or the Vodyanoi,
peering with his cold fish eyes, would pull them into the river. But this large, good-natured creature had blundered in, and yet he lived. The Rusalka's warning sprang to Vasya's mind. What are the Cherti afraid of?
You are fortunate that my foolhardy daughter went out foraging in such weather, and that she found you, said Pyotr.
Brother Rodion, his first hunger satisfied, risked a quick glance at the hearth. The daughter in question was grinding herbs, the firelight limned her slim body in gold. At first sight, he had thought her ugly, and even now he did not think her beautiful, but the more he looked, the harder it was to look away.
I am glad she did, Pyotr Vladimirovich, Rodion said hastily, seeing Pyotr's raised eyebrow. I have a message from Brother Alexander.
Sasha?
Asked Pyotr sharply. What news?
Brother Alexander is advisor to the Grand Prince, returned the novice with dignity. He has earned fame for good deeds and defense of the small. He is renowned for his wisdom and judgment.
As if I wished to hear of prowess, Sasha might have put to better use as master of his own lands, said Pyotr.
But Rodion heard the pride in his voice.
Get to the point. Such tidings would not bring you here so late in the year.
Rodion looked Pyotr in the eye.
Has your tribute to the Khan gone forth yet, Pyotr Vladimirovich?
It will go with the snow, growled Pyotr.
The harvest had been scanty, the game thin. Pyotr grudged every grain and every pelt. They would slaughter what sheep they might, and his sons wore themselves to shadows hunting. The women went out foraging in all weathers.
Pyotr Vladimirovich, what if you did not need to pay such tribute? Rodion pursued.
Pyotr did not like leading questions and said so.
Very well, said the young man steadily. The prince and his counselors have asked themselves why we should pay tribute anymore, or bend the knee to a pagan king. The last Khan was murdered, and his heirs cannot sit a 12-month on their thrones before they too are slain. They are all in disarray. Why should they be masters of good Christians? Brother Alexander has gone to Sarai to judge their quality, and he has sent me to ask your help, should the Grand Prince choose to fight.
Vasya saw her father's face change and wondered what the young monk had said.
War, said Pyotr. Freedom, Rodion rejoined. We wear the yoke lightly here in the north, said Pyotr. And yet you wear it. Better a yoke than the fist of the Golden Horde, said Pyotr. They need not meet us in open battle, only send men in the night. 10 fire arrows would burn Moscow to the ground, and my house is also made of wood.
Pyotr Vladimirovich, Brother Alexander bid me say,
forgive me, said Pyotr, rising abruptly, but I have heard enough. I hope you will forgive me.
Rodion had perforce to nod and turn his attention to his mead.
Why should we not fight, father? Kolya demanded.
Two dead rabbits dangled by the ears from his fist. Father and son were taking advantage of a break in the downpour to walk a trapline.
Because I foresee little good in it and much harm, Pyotr replied, not for the first time.
Neither of his sons had given him any peace since the monk had turned their heads with stories of their brother's renown.
Your sister lives in Moscow. Would you have her caught in a city under siege? When the Tatars invest a city, they do not leave survivors.
Kolya dismissed the possibility with a wave, the rabbits jerking grotesquely at the end of his arm.
Of course we would meet them in battle well before the gates of Moscow.
Pyotr bent to check the next snare, which was empty.
And think, father, Kolya went on, warming to his theme, we might send goods south in trade, not tribute. My cousin would kneel to no one, a prince in truth. Your great-grandchildren might be grand princes themselves. I'd rather my sons living and my daughter safe than a chance at glory
for unborn descendants.
Seeing his son's mouth open on another protest, Pyotr added more gently,
Sinok, you know that Sasha left sorely against my will. I will not stoop to tying my own son to the doorpost. If you wish to fight, you may go as well. But I will not bless a fool's war, and no scrap of cloth or silver or horse flesh will I give you. Sasha, you remember, might be rich in renown, but he must beg his bread and tend the herbs in his own garden.
Whatever Kolya might have replied was drowned by an exclamation of satisfaction, for yet another rabbit hung in a snare, its mottled autumn coat streaked with dirt. While his son bent to extricate it, Pyotr raised his head and went suddenly still. The air smelled of new death. Pios, Pyotr's boarhound, shrank against his master's shins, whining like a puppy.
Kolya, said Pyotr.
Something in his father's tone sent the young man to his feet, a flash in his black eyes.
I smell it, he said after a moment's pause. What ails the dog?
For Pios whined and trembled and looked eagerly back toward the village. Pyotr shook his head. He was casting from side to side, almost like a scent hound himself. He said no word, but pointed. A splash of blood in the leaf litter around their feet. Not the rabbits. Pyotr gestured peremptorily at the dog. The boarhound whined and slunk forward. Kolya hung a little to the left, owl silent as his father. They came cautiously round a stand of trees into a small, scrubby clearing, grim with decaying leaves. It had been a buck. A haunch lay almost at Pyotr's feet, trailing blood and tendon. The main part of the carcass lay a little way off, the entrails burst and spreading, stinking even in the cold. The gore gave neither man pause, though the buck's horned head lulled near their feet, tongue dangling. But they exchanged a speaking glance, for nothing in those woods could so mutilate a creature. And what beast would kill a fat autumn buck but leave the meat? Pyotr squatted in the mud, eyes skimming the ground.
The buck ran and the hunter gave chase. The buck had been running hard and was favoring a foreleg. He bounded into the clearing here.
Pyotr was moving as he spoke, half-crouched.
One leap, two, and then a blow from the side struck him down.
Pyotr paused. Pios crouched on his belly at the very edge of the clearing, never taking his eyes off his master.
But what struck the blow? He muttered.
Kolya had read a similar tale in the mud.
No tracks, he said.
His long knife hissed as it slid free of its scabbard.
None,
nor any signs that someone tried to sweep them away.
Look to the dog, said Pyotr.
Pios had risen from his crouch and was staring at a gap between the trees. Every hair on his rough-coated spine stood on end, and he was growling low between bare teeth. As one, both men spun, Pyotr's knife in his hand almost before he willed it. Briefly, he thought he saw movement, a darker shadow in the gloom, but then it was gone. Pios barked once, high and sharp, a sound of fearful defiance. Pyotr snapped his fingers at his dog. Kolya turned with him. They crossed the blood-smeared leaf mold and made for the village without a word. A day later, when Rodion knocked on Konstantin's door, the priest was inspecting his paints by candlelight. The ends and dribbles of mixed color turned to mold in the damp. There was daylight outside, but the priest's windows were small, and the roar of the rain held back the sun. The room would have been dim if not for the candles.
Too many candles, Rodion thought. A terrible waste.
Father, bless, said Rodion.
God be with you, said Konstantin.
The room was cold. The priest had wrapped a blanket round his thin shoulders. He did not offer Rodion one.
Pyotr Vladimirovich and his sons have gone hunting, said Rodion, but they will not speak of their quarry.
Said they nothing in your hearing?
Not in my hearing, no, replied Konstantin.
The rain poured down without. Rodion frowned.
I cannot imagine what they would bring their boar spears for while leaving the dogs behind. And this is cruel weather for riding.
Konstantin said nothing.
Well, God grant them success, whatever it is, Rodion persevered. I must leave in 2 days, and I do not care to meet whatever put that look in Pyotr Vladimirovich's eye.
I will pray for your safety on the road, said Konstantin curtly.
God keep you, replied Rodion, ignoring the dismissal.
I know you do not like your reflections disturbed, but I would ask your counsel, brother.
Ask, said Konstantin.
Pyotr Vladimirovich wishes his daughter to take vows, said Rodion. He has charged me, with words and money, that I might go to Moscow, to the Ascension, and prepare them for her coming. He says she will be sent with the tribute goods, as soon as there is enough snow for sledges.
A pious duty, brother, said Konstantin.
But he had looked up from his paints.
What need of counsel?
Because she is not a girl formed for convents, said Rodion. A blind man could see it.
Konstantin set his jaw, and Rodion saw with surprise the priest's face ablaze with anger.
She cannot marry, said Konstantin. Only sin awaits her in this world. Better she retire. She will pray for her father's soul. Pyotr Vladimirovich is an old man. He will be glad of her prayers when he goes to God.
This was all very well. Nonetheless, Rodion knew a pang of conscience.
Pyotr's second daughter reminded him of brother Alexander. Though Sasha was a monk, he had never stayed long at the Lavra. He rode the breadth of Rus on his good war horse, tricking and charming and fighting by turns. He wore a sword on his back and was advisor to princes. But such a life was not possible for a woman who took the veil.
Well, I will do it, said Rodion reluctantly. Pyotr Vladimirovich has been my host, and I can hardly do less. But, brother, I wish you would change his mind. Someone surely can be persuaded to marry Vasilisa Petrovna. I do not think she will last long in a convent. Wild birds die in cages.
And so, snapped Konstantin, blessed are those who linger only a little in this mire of wickedness before going into the presence of God. I only hope her soul is prepared when the meeting comes. Now, brother, I would like to pray.
Without a word, Rodion crossed himself and slipped out the door, blinking in the feeble daylight.
Well, I am sorry for the girl, he thought, and then uneasily, how thick the shadows lie in that room.
Pyotr and Kolya took their men hunting not once, but several times before the snow. The rain would not cease, though it grew steadily colder, and their strength faltered in the long wet days. But try as they might, they never found so much as a trace of the thing that had torn the buck to pieces. The men began to mutter and at last to protest. Weariness vied with loyalty, and no one was sorry when the frost put an end to the hunting. But that was when the first dog disappeared. She was a tall bitch, a good whelper, and fearless before the boar. But they found her near the palisade, headless and bloody in the snow. The only tracks near her frozen body were her own running paw prints. Folk took to going into the woods in twos, with axes in their belts. But then a pony disappeared, while it stood tied to a sled for hauling firewood. Its owner's son, returning with an armful of logs, saw the empty traces and a great swath of scarlet splashed across the muddy earth. He dropped his logs, even his axe, and ran for the village. Dread settled over the village, a clinging, muttering dread, tenacious as cobwebs.
Chapter 19. Nightmares. November roared in with black leaves and gray snow. On a morning like dirty glass, Father Constantine stood beside his window, tracing with his brush the slim foreleg of St. George's white stallion. His work absorbed him, and all was still. But somehow, the silence listened. Constantine found himself straining to hear.
Lord, will you not speak to me?
When someone scratched at his door, Constantine's hand jerked and almost smeared the paint.
Come in, he snarled, flinging his brush aside.
Anna Ivanovna it was, surely, with baked milk and adoring, tedious eyes. But it was not Anna Ivanovna.
Father, bless, said Agafya, the serving girl.
Constantine made the sign of the cross.
God be with you, but he was angry.
Do not take offense, Batyushka, the girl whispered, wringing her work-hardened hands. She hovered at the doorway. If I may have only a moment.
The priest pressed his lips together. Before him, St. George bestrode the world on an oaken panel. His steed had only three legs. The fourth, as yet unpainted, would be raised in an elegant curve to trample a serpent's head.
What do you wish to say to me? Constantine tried to make his voice gentle.
He did not entirely succeed. She paled and shrank away, but she did not go.
We have been true Christians, Batyushka, she stammered. We take the sacrament and venerate the icons, but it has never gone so hard with us. Our gardens drowned in the summer rain. We will be hungry before the season turns.
She paused and licked her lips.
I wondered, I cannot help but wonder, have we offended the old ones? Chernobog, perhaps, who loves blood. My grandmother always said it would come to disaster if ever he turned against us. And I fear now for my son.
She looked at him in mute supplication.
Better to be afraid, growled Constantine. His fingers itched for his brush. He fought for patience. It shows your true repentance. This is the time of trial, when God will know his loyal servants. You must hold fast, and you shall see kingdoms presently, the like of which you do not imagine. The things you speak of are false, illusions to tempt the unwary. Hold to truth, and all will be well.
He turned away, reaching for his paints, but her voice came again.
But I don't need a kingdom, Batyushka, just enough to feed my son through the winter. Marina Ivanovna kept the old ways, and our children never starved.
Constantine's face assumed an expression not unlike that of the spear-wielding saint before him. Agafya stumbled against the doorframe.
And now God will have his reckoning, he hissed. His voice flowed like black water with a rime of ice. Think you that just because it was delayed 2 years or 10, that God was not wroth at such blasphemy? The wheel grinds slowly.
Agafya quivered like a netted bird.
Please, she whispered.
She seized his hand, kissed the spattered fingers.
Will you beg forgiveness for us then? Not for my own sake, but for my son.
As I can, he said more gently, putting a hand on her bowed head. But you must first ask it yourself.
Yes, yes, Batyushka, she said, looking up with a face full of gratitude.
When at last she hurried out into the gray afternoon and the door clicked shut behind her, the shadows on the wall seemed to stretch like waking cats.
Well done,
the voice echoed in Constantine's bones. The priest froze, every nerve alight.
Above all, they must fear me so that they can be saved.
Constantine flung his brush aside and knelt.
I wish only to please you, Lord.
I am pleased, said the voice.
I have tried to set these people on the path of righteousness, said Constantine. I would only ask, Lord, That is, I have wanted to ask.
The voice was infinitely gentle. What would you ask?
Please, said Constantine, let me see my task here finished. I would carry your word to the ends of the earth if only you asked it. But the forest is so small.
He bowed his head, waiting. But the voice laughed in loving delight, so that Constantine thought his soul would flee his body in joy.
Of course you shall go, it said. One more winter. Only sacrifice and be faithful. Then you shall show the world my glory, and I will be with you forever.
Only tell me what I must do, said Constantine. I will be faithful.
I desire you to invoke my presence when you speak, said the voice.
Another man would have heard the eagerness in it.
And when you pray, call me with every breath and call me by name. I am the bringer of storms. I would be present among you and give you grace.
It shall be done, said Constantine fervently. Just as you say, it shall be done. Only never leave me again.
All the candles wavered with something very like a long sigh of satisfaction.
Obey me always, returned the voice, and I will never leave you.
The next day, the sun drowned in sodden clouds and cast ghostly light over a world stripped of color. It began to snow at daybreak. Piotr's household went shivering to the little church and huddled together inside. The church was dark except for the candles. Almost, thought Vasya, she could hear the snow outside, burying them until spring. It shut off a light, but the candles lit the priest. The bones of his face cast elegant shadows. He wore a look more remote than his icons, and he had never been so beautiful. The icon screen was finished. The risen Christ, the final icon, was enthroned above the door. He sat in judgment above a stormy earth with an expression that Vasya could not read.
I invoke thee, said Constantine, low and clear, God who has called me up to be his servant, the voice out of darkness, lover of storms, be thou present among us.
And then louder, he began the service.
Blessed be God, Constantine said.
His eyes were great dark hollows, but his voice seemed to flicker with fire. The service went on and on. When he spoke, the people forgot the icy damp and the grinning specter of starvation. Earthly troubles were as nothing when that voice touched them. The Christ above the doors seemed to raise his hand in benediction.
Listen, said Constantine.
His voice dropped so that they had to strain to hear.
There is evil among us.
The congregation looked at each other.
It creeps into our souls in the night, in the silence. It is waiting for the unwary.
Irina crept closer to Vasya, and Vasya put an arm around her.
Only faith, Constantine continued, only prayer, only God can save you.
His voice rose on each word.
Fear God and repent. It is your only escape from damnation. Otherwise, you will burn. You will burn.
Anna screamed. Her scream echoed the length of the little church. Her eyes bulged beneath the bluish lids.
No, she screamed. Oh God, not here. Not here.
Her voice seemed to split the walls and multiply, so that there were 100 women shrieking. In the instant before the room fell into chaos, Vasya followed her stepmother's pointing finger. The risen Christ over the door was smiling at them now, when before he had been solemn. His two dog teeth dented his lower lip, but instead of his two eyes, he only had one. The other side of his face was seamed with blue scars, and the eye was a socket, crudely sewn. Somewhere, Vasya thought, fighting the fear that closed her throat. She had seen that face before. But she had no time to think. The folk on either side of her clapped their hands to their ears, flung themselves face down, or shoved their way toward the safety of the narthex. Anna was left standing alone. She laughed and wept, clawing the air. No one would touch her. Her screams echoed off the walls. Constantine shoved his way to her side and struck her across the face. She subsided, choking, but the noise seemed to echo on and on, as though the icons themselves were screaming. Vasya seized Irina in the first moil of chaos to keep her from being swept off her feet. An instant later, Alyosha appeared and wrapped strong arms around Dunya, who was small as a child, fragile as November leaves. The four clung together. The people milled and shouted. "I must go to mother," said Irina, squirming. "Wait, little bird," said Vasya. "You would only be trampled." "Mother of God," Alyosha said. "If anyone learns Irina's mother takes such fits, no one will ever marry her." "No one will know," snapped Vasya. Her sister had turned very pale. She glared at her brother as the crowd pushed them against the wall. She and Alyosha shielded Dunya and Irina with their bodies. Vasya looked again at the iconostasis. Now it was as it had always been. Christ sat in his throne above the world, his hand raised to bless. Had she imagined the other face? But if she had, why had Anna screamed?
"Silence!"
Constantine's voice rang like a dozen bells. Everyone froze. He stood before the iconostasis and raised a hand, a living echo of the image of Christ above his head.
"Fools," he thundered. "Are you children to be afraid of a woman screaming? Get up, all of you. Be silent. God will protect us."
They crept together like chastened children. What Piotr's bellowing had not accomplished, the voice of the priest did. They swayed nearer him. Anna stood shuddering, weeping, ashen as the sky at dawn. The only face paler in that church belonged to the priest himself. The candlelight filled the nave with strange shadows. There again, one flung across the iconostasis that was not the shadow of a man. "God," thought Vasya, when the service haltingly renewed.
"Here?
Certi cannot come into churches. They are creatures of this world, and church is for the next." Yet she had seen the shadow. Piotr led his wife home as soon as could be managed. Her daughter undressed her and put her to bed. But Anna cried and retched and cried and would not stop. At last Irina, desperate, went back to the church. She found Father Constantine kneeling alone before the icon screen. After the service that day, the people had kissed his hand and begged him to save them. He looked at peace then, even triumphant. But now Irina thought he looked like the loneliest person in the world.
"Will you come to my mother?" she whispered.
Constantine jerked to his knees, looked around.
"She is weeping," said Irina. "She will not stop."
Constantine did not speak. He was straining all his senses. After the people left the church, God had come to him in the smoke of extinguished candles.
"Beautiful."
The whisper sent the smoke curling in little eddies along the floor.
"They were so frightened."
The voice sounded almost gleeful. Constantine was silent. For an instant, he wondered if he was a madman and the voice had come crawling out of his own heart.
"But no, of course not. It is only your wickedness that doubts, Konstantin Nikonovich."
"I am glad you came among us," murmured Constantine under his breath, "to lead your people in righteousness." But the voice had not answered, and now the church was still. Louder, Constantine said to Irina,
"Yes, I will come."
Here is Father Constantine, said Irina, drawing the priest into her mother's room. He will comfort you. I will get supper. Vasya is burning the milk already. She ran out.
The church, Batyushka? Sobbed Anna Ivanovna when the two were alone. She lay in her bed wrapped in furs.
The church! Never the church!
What foolishness you talk, said Constantine. The church is protected by God. God alone makes his dwelling in the church, and his saints and his angels.
But I saw...
You saw nothing!
Constantine laid a hand on her cheek. She shivered. His voice dropped lower, hypnotic. He touched her lips with a forefinger.
You saw nothing, Anna Ivanovna.
She raised one trembling hand and touched his.
I will see nothing if you tell me so, Batyushka.
She blushed like a girl. Her hair was dark with sweat.
Then see nothing, Constantine said.
He pulled his hand away.
I see you, she said. It was barely a breath.
You are all I see sometimes in this horrible place with the cold and the monsters and the starving. You are a light to me. She caught at his hand again. She propped herself on one elbow. Her eyes swam with tears.
Please, Batyushka, she said. I want only to be close.
You are mad, he said. He pushed her hands down and drew away. She was soft and old, rotted with fear and disappointed hopes.
You are married. I have given myself to God.
Not that, she cried in despair. Never that. I want you to see me. Her throat worked and she stammered. To see me. You see my stepdaughter. You watch her. As I have watched you, I watch you. Why not me? Why not me? Her voice rose to a wail.
Hush.
He laid a hand on the door.
I see you. But Anna Ivanovna, there is little to see.
The door was heavy. When closed, it muffled the sound of her weeping. That day, the people stayed near their ovens while the snow flurried down. But Vasya slipped away to see to the horses.
He is coming, said Mish, rolling a wild eye.
Vasya went to her father. We must bring the horses inside the palisade, she said, tonight before dusk.
Why are you here to burden us, Vasya? Snapped Pyotr.
The snow was falling thickly, catching on her hats and shoulders. You ought to have been gone, long gone and safe. But you frighten your suitor, and now you are here, and it is winter. Vasya did not reply. Indeed, she could not, for she saw suddenly and clearly that her father was afraid. She had never known her father afraid. She wanted to hide in the oven like a child.
Forgive me, father, she said, mastering herself.
This winter will pass, as others have passed. But I think that now, at night, we should bring the horses in. Pyotr drew a deep breath.
You are right, daughter, he said. You are right. Come, I will help you.
The horses settled a little when the gate was shut behind them. Vasya took Mish and Buran into the stable itself, while the less prized horses milled in the dooryard. The little Vasila put his hand in hers.
Do not leave us, Vasya.
I must get my soup, said Vasya. Dunya is calling, but I will come back. She ate her soup, curled in the back of Misha's narrow stall, and fed the mare her bread. Afterward, Vasya wrapped herself in a horse blanket and counted the shadows on the stable wall. The Vasila sat beside her.
Do not go, Vasya, he said.
When you stay, I remember my strength, and I remember that I am not afraid. So Vasya stayed, shivering despite the straw and her horse blanket.
The night was very cold. She thought she would never sleep. But she must have, for after moonset she awoke, freezing. The stable was dark. Even Vasya, cat-eyed, could barely make out Mish standing above her. For a moment all was still. Then, from without, came a soft chuckle. Mish snorted and backed, tossing her head. The white showed in a ring around her eye. Vasya rose in silence, letting her blanket fall. The cold air sank fangs into her flesh. She crept to the stable door. There was no moon, and fat clouds smothered the stars. The snow was still falling. Creeping over the snow, silent as the flakes, was a man. He darted from shadow to shadow. When he let out his breath, he laughed deep in his throat. Vasya crept closer. She could not see a face, only ragged clothes and a thatch of coarse hair. The man drew near the house and put a hand on the door. Vasya shouted aloud just as the man flung himself into the kitchen. There was no sound of flesh on wood. He passed through the door like smoke. Vasya ran across the dvor. The yard glittered with virgin snow. The ragged man had left no footprints. The snow was thick and soft. Vasya's limbs felt heavy. Still, she ran, shouting, but before she could come to the house, the man had leaped back into the dooryard, landing animal life on all fours. He was laughing. "Oh," he said, "it has been so long. How sweet are the houses of men! And oh, how she screamed!" He caught sight of Vasya then, and the girl stumbled. She knew the scars, the single gray eye. It was the face on the icon. The face of the sleeper in the woods years ago. How can that be? "Well, what is this?" the man said. He paused. She saw memory cross his face. "I remember a little girl with your eyes, but now you are a woman." His eye fastened on hers as though he meant to strip a secret from her soul. "You are the little witch who tempts my servant." "But I did not see." He came nearer and nearer. Vasya tried to flee, but her feet would not obey. His breath reeked of hot blood. He blew it in waves over her face. She gathered her courage. "I am no one," she said. "Get out. Leave us be." His humid fingers flicked out and lifted her chin. "Who are you, girl?" And then lower. "Look at me." In his eye lay madness. Vasya would not look, knew she must not. But his fingers were like an iron trap, and in a moment she would. But then an icy hand seized her, pulled her away. She smelled cold water and crushed pine. Over her head a voice was speaking. "Not yet, brother," it said. "Go back." Vasya could see nothing of the speaker, except a curving line of black cloak. But she could see the other, the one-eyed man. He was grinning and cringing and laughing all at once. "Not yet, but it is done, brother," he said. "It is done." He winked his good eye at Vasya and was gone. The black cloak around Vasya became the whole world. She was cold and a horse was neighing, and far away someone was screaming. Then Vasya awoke, stiff and shivering on the floor in the stable. Mish pressed her warm nose to the girl's face. But though Vasya was awake, the cry could still be heard. It went on and on. Vasya sprang to her feet, shaking away her nightmare. The horses in stalls whinnied and kicked, splintering the stable walls. The horses in the freezing dvor milled in panic. There was no ragged one-eyed figure. A dream, Vasya thought. Only a dream. She darted among the horses, dodging the heaving bodies. The kitchen was churning like a nest of angry wasps.
her brothers bowled their way in, half awake and armed. Irina and Anna Ivanovna crowded into the opposite doorway. The servants milled here and there, crossing themselves or praying or clutching one another. And then her father came, big and steady, his sword in one hand. He forced his way, cursing, between clusters of terrified servants. "Hush," he said to the milling people. Father Constantine burst in on his heels. It was little Agafya, the maidservant, who was screaming. She sat bolt upright on her pallet. Her white-knuckled hands clutched the wool of her blanket. She had bitten into her lower lip so that the blood bloomed on her chin, and a ring of white showed around her unblinking eyes. The screams sliced the air, like icicles falling from the eaves outside. Vasya pushed her way through the frightened people. She seized the girl by the shoulders. "Agafya, listen to me," she said. "Listen. It's all right. You are safe. All is well. Hush now. Hush." She held the girl tightly, and after a moment, Agafya moaned and fell silent. Her wide eyes slowly focused on Vasya's face. Her throat worked. She tried to speak. Vasya strained to hear. "He came for my sins," she choked. She heaved for breath. A small boy crawled through the crowd. "Mother," he cried. "Mother." He flung himself on her, but she did not heed. Irina was suddenly there, her small face grave. "She has fainted," the child said seriously. "She needs air and water."
"It is only a nightmare," said Father Constantine to Pyotr. "Best to leave her to the women."
Pyotr might have replied, but no one heard, for Vasya cried out then in shock and sudden fury. The entire room convulsed in new fright. Vasya was staring at the window. Then,
"No," she said, visibly gathering herself. "Forgive me. Nothing. It was nothing."
Pyotr frowned. The servants looked at her with open suspicion and murmured among themselves. Dunya shuffled to Vasya, her breath rustling hollow in her chest.
"Girls always have nightmares when the weather changes," Dunya wheezed, loud enough for the room to hear. "Go on, child, fetch water and honey wine."
She gave Vasya a hard look. Vasya said nothing. Her glance strayed once more to the window. For an instant, she could have sworn she'd seen a face, but it could not be, for it was the face out of her dream, blue-scarred and one-eyed. It had grinned and winked at her through the wavering ice. As soon as it was light the next morning, Vasya went looking for the domovoy. She searched until the watery sun was high and into the brief afternoon, shirking her work. The sun was tilting west when she managed to drag the creature surreptitiously out of the oven. His beard was smoldering around the edges. He was thin and bent, his clothes shabby, his manner defeated. "Last night," Vasya said without preamble, cradling a burnt hand, "I dreamed of a face and then I saw it at the window. It had one eye and it was smiling. Who was it?"
"Madness," mumbled the domovoy. "Appetite, the sleeper, the eater. I could not keep it out." "You must try harder," snapped Vasya.
But the domovoy's gaze wandered and his mouth drooped open.
"I am weak," he slurred. "And the woodguard is weak. Our enemy has loosened his chain. Soon he will be free. I cannot keep him out." "Who is the enemy?" "Appetite," said the domovoy again. "Madness! Terror! He wants to eat the world."
"How can I defeat it?" said Vasya urgently.
"How may the house be protected?"
"Offerings," muttered the domovoy. "Bread and milk will strengthen me, and perhaps blood. But you are only one girl alone, and I cannot take my life from you. I will fade. The eater will come again."
Vasya seized the domovoy and shook him so that his jaws clacked together.
His dull eyes cleared, and he looked momentarily astonished.
"You will not fade," Vasya snapped. "You can take your life from me. You will. The one-eyed man, the eater, he will not get in again. He will not."
There was no milk, but Vasya stole bread and shoved it into the domovoi's hand. She did it that night and every night thereafter, scanting her own meals. She cut her hand and smeared the blood on sills and before the oven. She pressed her bloody hand to the domovoi's mouth. Her ribs started through her skin, her eyes grew hollow, and nightmares dogged her sleeping. But the nights slipped past, one, two, a dozen, and no one else screamed at something that was not there. The wavering domovoi held, and she poured her strength into him. But little Agafya never spoke sense again. Sometimes she would plead with things that no one could see. Saints and angels and a one-eyed bear. Later she raved of a man and a white horse. One night she ran out of the house, collapsed blue-lipped in the snow, and died. The women prepared the body with as much haste as was seemly. Father Constantine kept vigil beside her, white to the lips, head bent, with a face no one could read. Though he knelt for hours at her side, he never once prayed aloud. The words seemed to catch in his straining throat. They buried Agafya in the brief winter daylight while the forest groaned around them. In the swift falling twilight, they hurried to huddle before their ovens. Agafya's child cried for his mother. His wailing hung like mist over the silent village. The night after the funeral, a dream seized Dunya like sickness, like the jaws of a hunting creature. She was standing in a dead forest, strewn with the stumps of blackened trees. An oily smoke veiled the flinching stars. Firelight flickered against the snow. The frost demon's face was a skull mask with the skin drawn tight. His soft voice frightened Dunya worse than shouting.
"Why have you delayed?"
Dunya gathered all her force.
"I love her," she said. "She is like my own daughter. You are winter, Morozko. You are death. You are cold. You cannot have her. She will give her life to God."
The frost demon laughed bitterly.
"She will die in the dark. Every day my brother's power waxes, and she saw him when she should not have. Now he knows what she is. He will slay her if he can, and take her for his own. Then you well may talk of damnation."
Morozko's voice softened a very little.
"I can save her," he said. "I can save you all. But she must have that jewel. Otherwise..."
And Dunya saw that the flickering firelight was her own village burning. The forest filled with creeping things whose faces she knew. Greatest among them was a grinning one-eyed man, and beside him stood another shape, tall and slender, corpse-pale, lank-haired.
"You let me die,"
the specter said in Vasya's voice, and her teeth gleamed between bloody lips. Dunya found herself seizing the necklace and holding it out. It made a tiny scrap of brightness in a world formless and dark.
"I did not know," Dunya stammered.
She reached for the dead girl, the necklace swinging from her fist.
"Vasya, take it! Vasya!"
But the one-eyed man only laughed, and the girl made no sign. Then the frost demon put himself between her and horror, seized her shoulders with hard, icy hands.
"You have no time, Avdotya Mikhailovna," he said. "Next time you see me, I will beckon and you will follow."
His voice was the voice of the wood. It seemed to echo in her bones, vibrate in her throat. Dunya felt her guts twist with fear and with certainty.
"But you can save her before you go," he went on. "You must save her. Give her the necklace. Save them all." "I will," whispered Dunya. "It will be as you say. I swear it. I swear."
And then her own voice woke her. But the chill of that burnt forest, of the frost demon's touch, lingered. Dunya's bones shook until it seemed they would shake through her skin. All she could see was the frost demon, intent and despairing, and the laughing face of his brother, the one-eyed creature. The two faces blurred into one. The blue stone in her pocket seemed to drip icy flame. Her skin cracked and blackened when her hand closed tight around it.